Welcome to the 330 Sports Show. We are live from Youngstown Studio. Today is Tuesday, October 5th, 2021, and I'm your host, Justin Coffin. Phone lines, we're going to open up here in a little bit, 330-595-1600, if you would like to call in, talk football, baseball, whatever. So, you know, again, 330-595-1600. We always have a loaded show on Tuesday. Today is no different. We're going to talk about the Browns, Vikings. We're going to talk about the Buckeyes and Rutgers game from this past weekend. We'll take a look around the NFL. We'll take a look around college football, just kind of see what the overall big picture of this weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about the Urban Meyer video that kind of went viral this past weekend. We'll get our thoughts on that. And The Major League Baseball playoffs actually begin tonight with the Red Sox and Yankees, sort of that wild card play-in game. So we'll talk about that. We'll give a little bit of a preview for the Major League Baseball playoffs, and I'm just going to give you my overall predictions for that. You can see I'm wearing a Youngstown Clothing Company shirt here. Long live the Chief. I just thought, it was kind of first of all, it's warm. I was planning on wearing like a hoodie today, but then I saw it was going to be like 75 degrees. But anyway, the Indians closed out their season and their overall name as the Cleveland Indians. They're now going to be the Cleveland Guardians starting next year. So we'll do a little goodbye to Cleveland Indians. Hello, Cleveland Guardians. And then, but first, we're going to do our little top five Tuesday. Before we do that, though, I want to kind of preview a show we're going to be doing this week. This is going to be in addition to our regular sports podcast content. We are going to be doing an entire show on Halloween movies. So a Halloween movie draft is going to be coming up this week. Joe and I are going to talk after the show. I'm not sure exactly when that's going to air, but either Wednesday or Thursday, we'll put it out there. And I'll make sure to share out those links. Mac Ambrell, Laura Allsweet, and Doug Eisenbron joined me with that. They really know their stuff we kind of encompassed a lot of different Halloween movies. So we did, anywhere from like kids movies to like absolutely frightening movies. So, and kind of like everything in between, mostly in the horror genre, but we kind of sprinkled in a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So that will be sometime this week. I'll let you know when that is coming up. So first, let's start with our top five Tuesday before we get into our sports stuff. So our top five Tuesday list is kind of just a funny one that, as we were doing our drafts, we did a Zoom call for our draft this past weekend. And it got me thinking, the movie Scream, I think Jamie Kennedy, the actor is one of the movie characters that kind of like spits out these rules of things that you should do, shouldn't do in horror movies. And I'm going to kind of go over those tropes, and Joe, feel free to jump in on this as you want. But I came up with a top 10 list. I couldn't just come up with five. I had to expand it to 10. So these are things to not do in a horror movie. So don't do these things. So let's start with number one. Number one, do not use a Ouija board under any circumstances. If I need to tell you why, then you haven't seen enough scary movies. No. I mean, I'm talking The Exorcist, Paranormal Activity. They have a freaking movie called Ouija out there too. So
have you ever used one?
I have not. I've been around one. I've seen it in the box, but I've never used it. So that might be a good idea for like, I'm going to throw Luke and Isaac a bone and say, hey, that's a good idea for a show on the MLO bros.
So we don't want it here.
This is your studio. So that's your call. If you want the Ouija board, we can break it out.
I always felt like something that's put together by Parker Brothers can't have like spiritual dimensions connectivity, right?
Right.
Parker Brothers has never put out a game that actually worked very well for me. So,
okay. Yeah, that's fair. So, but if you're in a horror movie, don't ever use the Ouija board. That's number one. Number two, never say or don't say, I'll be right back. Whoa. Or who's there? Just seriously, don't do it. You're probably going to die. So that's number two. That's kind of just an easy one. Number three is don't be an ass. I mean, that's just good life advice. I mean, usually the person, it's like the, and it's almost always a guy that, you know, they're just kind of like pompous. They're kind of like just that meathead or whatever, that they always have something to say, or they're always a little bit, a little extra. You know what I'm saying? So
we're always cheering on the death. That one we don't mind, right?
Yeah, the guy you're rooting for to get killed by the killer in the movie. So yeah, that guy. Number four is an 80s and 90s horror trope, mostly an 80s one. If you have sex, if you drink, or if you do drugs in an 80s movie, you're gonna die.
Yes.
And you're probably gonna die in a violent way. So yeah. So that
and usually it's gonna be Nancy Reagan dressed up as the killer.
So those are things all not to do in an 80s horror movie, especially. Number five, this goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Allow a spirit to possess a doll. Just, I mean, I'm talking Annabelle is more recent. And then, you know, you can go back to the early 90s, late 80s Child's Play, you know, and I'm sure there's some other ones in there. Dolls have always creeped me out, you know, from, I don't know, those Charlie McCarthy or what are those things called, the little puppeteers where you I can't think what their names are, but
the ventriloquist
yes. dolls. Yeah, those things creep me out. Really just any doll in general, unless it's a little stuffed animal or
did
something.
Did you ever see that horror movie that where the toys, the doll toys, come to life and kill everybody? I got made fun of so much for bringing that up. It's a scary movie, and everybody thought it was jerky. So I'm gonna find what it is and see if you've ever seen it.
Look that up and let me know. Let me know. All right, number six, don't investigate that strange noise yourself. You know it's going to be bad. It's like investigating a bad smell. It's a bad smell. Don't go investigating it. It's never going to be a good answer. So just don't investigate it, that strange noise. Number seven, unfortunately, if you're an African-American actor or actress, there's probably a good chance you're not going to make it, because the University of San Diego State, I believe, did a study, and they found African Americans are more likely to die in horror movies. It's a legit study that they did. And so, you know, again, on my list, I put don't be the black friend or split up on your own. It's not going to end well for you.
No.
Number eight sort of goes along with number six here, but don't run upstairs if you're getting chased. Go out the damn front door, you know, don't run upstairs. You know, it's not going to end well. It's not leaving you many possibilities on, and then you might have to jump out a window or something. Yeah. Just don't do it. Number nine, I think this one goes without saying, it's pretty commonsensical. Don't assume the killer is dead. Generally they have like these superpowers, or they're superhuman, or, you know, you shoot them 10 times or stab them 8 times. You know, you turn your back and take a deep breath, and you know they're going to come back for that one.
They get at least one jump in them,
right? Exactly. So never assume the killer is dead. At least wait for the cops to get there or something. So, and that's another one. I didn't put that on the list. Why don't these people ever call the police? Like, I mean, I understand in the 80s, not everyone has cell phones. Even the 90s, everybody's got a cell phone now. And so that's another one. And they never listen to their kids. The kids or the animals always will tell you something's creeping them out.
There's a clown in the closet, Mom. No, just go to sleep. Just go to sleep.
Exactly. And that goes along. That's a nice segue to number 10. Don't trust a clown.
Don't.
Ever.
Ever
trust the clown. I don't care if it's Bozo the clown at a circus. Don't trust that clown. First of all, it's an adult male or female dressed up in a clown costume. Just don't trust them. It's bad news. And especially one that lives in a sewer. I mean, that goes without saying.
With a red balloon. You know? Those are all the telltale signs.
Exactly. Telltale signs. Don't do it. So there's my top 10 list. If I missed anything, or is there any others you can think of?
Well, I found that title. I think it was Puppet Master.
Puppet Master.
You ever see any of them?
I have heard of it. I have not seen it.
Okay. So. It's one to watch. I mean, it is so like cheesy, killery,
you know.
But at the time, I was terrified, and like I, that was like the old first horror movie that I ever saw, and it just killed me, right? But all my friends saw Nightmare on Elm Street and Jason. I never saw any of those things. So I was like, oh, I got the scary movie for you, and I brought that one, and they laughed me out of the room as that was my scary movie.
There's one called Dead Silence that's like that. It's a little bit creepy. It's a little bit weird. But they're more of those like puppeteer, what'd you say they're called again?
Ventriloquist
dolls. Yeah, those are creepy to me. So, but yeah, you know, we could go all day with this, but we'll save it. Make sure to watch our horror movie special or Halloween movie special. Again, Joe and I are going to figure out a time for that to air, and it'll air sometime this week.
And if Saw didn't make the list, I'm disappointed.
It did make the list. I will say it got drafted very late.
Okay.
So there are some movies, and I'm going to put out an honorable mention list and all this and that. We have a great, great list. And the people that are on this Zoom call will really give you a lot to think about, like a lot of good tidbits, a lot of fun facts, a lot of interesting things you might not know or movies.
Now, how did you handle like the franchises that are 19 versions deep?
So we... I think that only came up once where we specifically drafted individual movies. So like Saw, you know, it was Saw 1. Like it probably should have stopped after Saw 1, like, you know, but we just wrote down Saw for that one. A Nightmare on Elm Street, I think we talked about that with like number 1 and number 3 were by far the best ones. 3 to this day, I watched that probably way too young as a kid, and it still creeps me out to this day. But the rest are kind of cheesy, kind of like generic, kind of like, you know, it gets to be almost more of a comedy horror movie than
because they overdo the characters. They're not creepy anymore because we got to know them too well.
Exactly. So
like Jason, get him. We like you now.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So that's kind of how we handled the series. We talked a little bit about specific ones, but my cousin Doug, who did this draft with us, he picked, and we each had 8 picks. He picked a movie from 8 different decades. So he picked a movie from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s, I don't know, something like that. Might have been from the 50s on up, but either way, it was a different decade, and it was pretty cool. So how we did it. All right, so let's get to some sports stuff. Let's start with the Cleveland Browns. Not scary. Baker Mayfield was a little scary this weekend. But the Browns defense, if you're an opposing quarterback, was very, very scary this weekend. The Browns defense ranks 2nd overall in the NFL. They are getting after the quarterback. They are really, really, really pressuring the quarterback, and Kirk Cousins felt that wrath this weekend. So, yeah, again, the Browns defense is really, really good. They are, this is the first time since 1995 in back-to-back weeks, the defense has given up a single-digit point total. So pretty awesome. So, I mean, that's the last year the Browns were in Cleveland before they moved, 1995. So pretty awesome there. And Kirk Cousins dropped back 40 times. 22 of those 40 times he was pressured.
Nice.
So, I mean, when you're getting to the quarterback that much, you're really disrupting what they want to do offensively. So,
and I'm telling you, Clowney added that extra pressure.
Yes.
That's his deal.
He has been fantastic. Yep. Miles Garrett leads the NFL in sacks. I mean, he did have 4.5.
Can I interrupt and talk about Miles for a minute?
Yeah.
My big fear, I mean, you saw that dude towards the end of the game, worn out. Defense is carrying that. They won that thing. And my fear is that you have too many abusive games on your defense like that.
Yeah.
That's when injuries start happening.
Sure.
And if that's the major part of your thing on the field, you're screwed if somebody like that gets hurt.
You know what? I would say Myles Garrett is probably the single most important player on the entire Cleveland Browns team, even ahead of Baker Mayfield. You could argue that depending on his performance Sunday, but Myles Garrett, when he is on, is a complete game wrecker for the defense. And to your point, the Browns are generally in control of the football. However, when the opponent is dropping back and he's after the quarterback, and after that takes its you know, it takes its toll on an athlete.
Because he was just bowling over people, man. He was pushing with everything he had.
Absolutely. So the Browns had the ball. They did have the ball 35 minutes to the Vikings 25 minutes. However, the last few minutes, Baker could have put the game away and iced it. He missed that throw to Beckham. He actually missed two throws to Beckham. He missed one out in the flat to one of the running backs. He missed one of the tight ends, Harrison Bryant, I believe, on an easy, like for what we would say an NFL quarterback would be an easy pass. So him not making some of those throws prevented the Browns from keeping the ball and keeping that defense off the field, giving the Vikings another opportunity. And thank God the defense stepped up because, you know, they gave up that touchdown on the opening drive. They did not give up a point the rest of the game after that. And the Vikings coming into this game were one of the most high powered offenses in the league. So, with
Baker, what's that word that they used in Tin Cup to describe it when he couldn't get the hit the shots? He had the, what the heck did he say it was?
Oh,
I want to say the shanks, but
That could be it. He might have had the shanks. Yeah.
So that what you think this, it's something that he got injured and he's not showing it, or do you think he's just had a bad game?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it could be, that could be a two-parter because in that Houston game, when he threw that interception, made the tackle, he had to leave. He banged up and it was his non-throwing shoulder, his left shoulder, but he banged it up. And could that be wearing on him? Could that be holding him back? Or maybe he did just have a bad game. You know,
think when you hurt something, you baby it, you look out for it, and you're self-conscious about being hit in it. So it changes his play.
You're not wrong. I mean, I think that's, it could be more mentally than physically. And if you look, we'll get to the Buckeyes here in a little bit, but they sat their quarterback out last week, CJ Stroud, rest his shoulder. He looked like a new guy this past weekend. So, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things. He's not showing up on the injury report. Stefanski doesn't seem to think it's an issue, and Baker hasn't made any excuses. So to his credit, maybe he is, you know, just playing it out, playing tough. But if you're putting your team in a bad situation, maybe, you know, you got some tough games coming up. You got the Chargers, you got the Cardinals, you know, you got the Steelers, whether you, again,
Chargers are going to be real similar to what we just saw last week too.
So. No doubt. So it's going to be one of those things, you know, if Baker's banged up, you probably got to play Case Keenum.
When's our bye?
It's late. It's like week 12 or 13. Okay, that's not gonna happen. We got a while for the bye, unfortunately, but it is late in the season. So if he needs a break later in the year, maybe that'll help, as the schedule eases up. But, you know, I want to give a real big shout out though, again, to this defensive line. Myles Garrett, you mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, both of Malik's, Harrison and McDowell, JOK, the draft pick. He is the number one ranked defensive rookie in the league right now. He is absolutely balling. They played this game without Greg Newsome, but Denzel Ward stepped up. He had his best game of the year against Justin Jefferson, who is one of the best receivers in the league. Grant Delpit looks great. You got to remember, this is Grant Delpit's third NFL game ever, you know, and he just came out. He actually had two interceptions. One was called back, but two interceptions. Well, let's just call it one interceptions. Had a great, great game. Actually, I apologize. Greedy Williams had his first interception. John Johnson III has struggled a little bit this year, but he is that guy on the back end of the defense that they really need. They've also been playing without Anthony Walker, and Ronnie Harrison left this game very early on with a concussion, which they found out later it was not, but he was put in protocol. So overall, though, the Browns defense, they deserve the whole defense deserves a game ball for this because they won this game for the Browns. And this is a game Browns teams in the past would have lost and might have got blown out, honestly. I was very nervous. The Vikings drive down. It was like an 8-minute drive, first part of the game. They go down and score. And then the Browns go down and they drive it all the way down, but then they get stuffed on fourth down trying to score a touchdown. And then when they punt it away, it could have got ugly because Minnesota looked good.
Yep, they had momentum.
Exactly. And so that next stop, they caught, you know, there was a couple back and forth three and outs, but the Browns ended up scoring right before half and then getting that 2-point conversion, which was awesome.
Yeah, I would really struggle with that defense to say who the key would be on it because, you know, you get pass pressure on it, then your corners can work better because they don't have like, you know, 90 minutes to run their routes and, you know, sling it. So,
well, and the cool thing about defense and especially this team is it's 11 guys playing together. You saw Joe Woods' defense. They were bringing blitzes. I saw Denzel Ward, you know, hit Cousins in the back. I saw a couple other guys that you normally don't see in the backfield making plays. And to their credit, they just stepped up and played a great game. It was 11 guys in sync. You know, a couple plays here and there they can clean up, but overall, you can tell they're starting to gel. And a lot of these guys, you got to remember too, they didn't play in the preseason, you know, and Delpit didn't play the first game. And there's, a few other things. A lot of these guys have never played together. John Johnson's new. Troy Hill, the kid from Youngstown too, played amazing. He had a great, great game. And the Browns outgained the Vikings 327 to 255. And you got to remember, they had like an 80 play, you know, drive the first play or first drive of the game. Minnesota only had 68 yards rushing as well. So to their credit, great job.
I got a question for you too. Mm-hmm. So like when I watch the Browns game, I feel like I'm an over evaluator where I really look deep on things. Mm-hmm. When I watch a team that we played play another team, they seem so much faster and they seem like the game happens at a different speed. I don't know if it's me or maybe our defense just like unwinds that and slows that offense down. You know what I mean? Like some of these later games that are on the West Coast and they have way different offenses than we're used to seeing. But I think we make teams play at us a little bit different.
And if you can do that, that shows you're a good defense. If you can take the control, the pace to that other team, you don't want to play. You'll hear that in basketball a lot. You know, you want to play your style. Don't play the other team's style. In football, that's a little harder to do because the defense has to match personnel. You know, you got to run a lot of, if they're running four wide receivers, you got to have your dime package in. If they're running three, you got to run a nickel. If they're running, you know, power run game, you got to, you know, have your two corners, your two safeties, and bring in a heavy linebacker package. So it's all dependent on usually what the offense does. But like to your point, it's kind of like the Browns defense is dictating their play because they know, hey, they're getting to the quarterback, and if they got to make some throws and our corners can hold up for those 3-4 seconds,
right,
they
slow down a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly. So again, to the Browns credit, great defensive effort. On the other hand, Baker,
we're going to the offense
and the offense overall wasn't terrible. The run game was good. And again, you got to remember, this is Kevin Stefanski playing against his old team. He knows them extremely well. They know him extremely well. It's an 8-7 game. I think I predicted 35-31 for the final. I thought it was going to be a shootout. I did think it was going to be a close game, but I thought it was going to be a close game in the opposite direction. Baker struggled. And, you know, there's no sugarcoating it. He missed some throws. That one to Odell it would have put the game away. It would have made a 21-7. They would have had zero shot instead of getting the ball back, you know, with 3 minutes left with a chance to go down and score. That's plays he's got to make if he wants that big contract, if he wants to be the franchise guy. I don't know what it is, and I don't have the stats with me, but there's a pretty good sample size. I think Baker has now played 50 games at quarterback for the Browns. About half of them with Odell and about half without Odell. And the numbers are very, very staggering to see that he, you know, it shows he has played much better without Odell on the field. And again, we've had this conversation last year. Like, they seemed to hit stride when Odell got hurt. And was that a coincidence? Was it timing?
I didn't even think about that.
So
accuracy turns to shit when Odell gets on the field.
But again, too, Jarvis Landry's not playing either.
True.
He's a go-to. He should be back in 2 weeks. But there's a lot. It's not just a yes or no. But it's like a kind of, is he overthinking it? Is he, last week, him and Odell seemed to look good on the same page.
Well, this week, the not ones so that much. He missed were not even close. They weren't well defended. These were wide open guys that he either overthrew or threw on the wrong side of him.
Sure.
It wasn't like he was playing scared where he's afraid of a pickoff. Because, you know, like somebody gets intercepted a bunch of times and then you watch them throw a little bit longer to just stay away from defenders. It wasn't that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like you're almost throwing to not make a mistake rather than to just let it fly.
Exactly.
Let it fly. You know, go out and win instead of playing not to lose. So, all I'm going to say is this is the kind of thing that shows you we're a really good team now, because we can nitpick things after a win instead of after a blowout. If Baker would have played like that 2 years ago, Minnesota would have won that game 28-7, you know, but this year we win somehow 14-7 because we got a good defense that picks the offense up, and our run game can, for the most part, control the clock. So, it is really, really nice to have a good team that you can criticize a little bit after a win.
Yeah, it was a win and we're nitpicking still. That's a great luxury.
Such a great luxury.
All right, so here's one that that we haven't talked about yet. Back in old Browns, when if you know you have your left tackle Joe Thomas go out, it would have been a game changer and lights out, you know, offense.
Yep.
We lose a tackle, somebody comes in and you don't even notice that he was gone.
Yeah, yeah. And you're talking about Jed Wills, and I think it's time. Jedrick Wills. And if you guys don't know who he is, he's on that one Progressive commercial with Baker where he's trying to sell him the shoulder pad. he's a pretty cool guy. I like him. But he sustained that injury in the like second quarter of week one. And he just has not looked like himself the entire year. It's an ankle injury. It's lingering. Obviously it started out as low. Hopefully it's still a low ankle injury, but it's not going to get better without rest.
Nope.
So I think you got to put him on the shelf for at least 1 week, if not two, or you put him on IR for 3 weeks, and then he's coming back, and by midseason, he's ready to go again.
And that tackle was not bad. I don't even know who
they put in James. I think it was James Hudson, who's a rookie, but they've also has that guy, Blake Hance. And then they have another guy, why is his name Chris Hubbard, who is sort of like their I've heard him referred to as the Swiss Army knife, because he can play center, he can play guard, he can play tackle. He has been out the last 2 weeks, so he I believe is coming back this week, so he can go right back into that left tackle. But to your point again too, you know, it's kind of nice when you have, you know, I think they're trying to work these rookies in or younger guys in to get some game experience. But if you have Chris Hubbard, a proven veteran that can go right in there, hopefully we can rely on him.
I'm curious if the offensive coordinator, if they'll stack up extra like tight ends or give some help to the tackle if he goes out, if he's just a rookie.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I didn't notice any leaks, but I didn't see if the offense changed where they put something over to that side more than they normally do.
Well, yeah. And the next couple of weeks, I mean, you're playing Joey Bosa against the Chargers. You're playing Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt with the Cardinals. And then you got T.J. Watt, I believe, is the week after that. So you got a lot of good pass rushers coming the next couple of weeks. So you need to make sure that line is formidable. And the rest of the line, the four other dudes are playing their butts off. They're great.
For sure.
But to Jedrick Wills' credit, he is toughing it out. He is trying to get out there. But on a bum ankle, there's only so much you can do. And it's eventually going to give out until it gets healthy. And anybody that's sprained their ankle knows what I'm talking about. It is not fun.
No.
And eventually, I mean, you could just be walking or limping and it just gives out on you for no reason.
You plant on a hurt ankle and it lets you know.
Yeah. And you hear doctors sometimes say it's worse sometimes to sprain your ankle badly than to actually break it, because you break it, you rest it, you're off of it. And then 6 weeks later, you're fine. Whereas you sprain it and then you kind of like baby it and then the other ankle starts hurting. And I don't know, I'm no doctor, but I've dealt with a lot of ankle injuries and some player ankle injuries. And I know those can be a pain in the butt. So let's talk real quick. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the Browns.
I derailed you. That was
no,
my
no,
fault.
No, no. This is all great stuff, and it all leads right into what I'm talking about. So, again, let's talk real quick about the rushing attack. So 184 yards on the ground for the Browns, 100 of them from Nick Chubb and 69 of them from Kareem Hunt. So the Browns rushing attack continues to pound the ball, and, you know, chunt as sounds like a dirty word, no. But, you know, the chunt attack.
Don't
so 184 yards rushing on the ground. I'm just borrowing it. That's if somebody can come up with a better nickname, I would gladly use that. And then obviously Stefanski's aggressiveness we've already talked about is paying off, you know, going for the fourth down. Some people, it's weird because when it works, people love it. When it doesn't work, oh, why are you doing this? There's always second guessing in sports. There's always Monday morning quarterbacking. It's going to happen. But to me, I love it. I love the aggressiveness. I love going for two in that situation when the Vikings called that timeout they didn't have, you know, instead of the 3 yard line or the 2 yard line, whatever it is, you get to the one. And with those running backs and that offensive line, you got to take advantage of that. So, again, game balls. I think, you know, if you're giving it specifically to the defensive player, I'd give it to Greedy Williams. And if you're giving it to a specific offensive player, I think I'm actually giving it to Rashard Higgins, Hollywood Higgins, because I think he had a very, very good game. He was the wide receiver that stepped up, kind of Baker's reliable target. And then I'm giving a game ball to Kevin Stefanski too, because, you know, old team, he's kind of one of those guys that's not going to show a whole lot of emotions, but, you know, you spend 14 years in a place, you know, you have fond memories of it. And, you know, so game ball to him, pulling out a win when your team especially wasn't playing its best football.
On the road.
On the road. Exactly. So you move on. You are now 3-1. You're playing some good football, but you know you have not even come close to reaching your ceiling yet, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So let's take a look around the rest of the NFL. We're going to start with just some basic scores. You know, obviously the Jacksonville-Cincinnati game, close one on Thursday, and then last night the Chargers kind of beat up on the Raiders. But just some notes from this weekend. Tom Brady, obviously that big, you know, big homecoming there in New England against the Patriots, pulled out a 19-17 victory. The Patriots had a shot late to win that game, but it kind of clanked off the goalpost there. But Tom Brady breaks Drew Brees' passing record. Most yards in NFL history, 80,560. I'd like to do the math on that and see how long of a distance that is. So I guess you multiply that by three and see how many feet that is. And
what was the number?
All right, so 80,000.
Okay.
560. And then multiply that by three.
Got it.
Okay. And
that's
then
241,000.
All right. And divide that by 5,280.
All right. 45 miles.
45.
Almost 46.
Almost 46 miles of passing yards in his career.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. So you could get from here to Akron passing that ball in Tom Brady. And that's just his completions, you know, and that's pretty crazy. So Mac Jones also looked good in that game. I think he completed 19 straight passes at one point, which actually tied the most in Tom Brady's career, which is pretty crazy. Justin Fields got his first win for the Bears, so a nice bounce back game for them. The Chiefs win big, and they did not punt one time in that game against the Eagles. The awful New York Jets and the awful New York Giants picked up wins this weekend, so good for them. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of them this year, but good for them on big wins.
That Jets quarterback's like 10 years old.
He does. Zach Wilson looks like he is literally like he looks like he could be your son.
Right.
Yeah, he is a young kid, but he is a powerful arm. So good for him, but it's going to be a long year. It's going to be a long year for that 8-year-old in New York City. The little kid, he's like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone too. Like meeting Donald Trump in the hotel there. So Cowboys look good so far this year. They come out and beat Carolina. Carolina, you know, a 3-0 team, but, Dallas really just kind of throttled them. The Buffalo Bills, they just dominated their second opponent in a row. They shut out Miami last week. This week they beat the Houston Texans 40-0. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, who the Browns are going to be facing in a couple weeks here, they look great. Murray looks like the early season MVP. The Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens, you know, pick up a road win at Denver. They also set an NFL, I don't know if it's set or tied an NFL record of most consecutive 100-yard rushing games. I believe it was 42 or 43. And there was a little controversy because that game was out of hand or like a two-score game. And, you know, I think they were up 23-7. They roll Lamar Jackson out just to get like a 5-yard gain so they can get over that 100-yard mark in the last second or last couple plays of the game. So instead of, you know, taking a knee, the Broncos didn't like that too much, but I don't know. Like,
suck it up, Buttercup. I know. Professional.
Exactly. It's like, you don't want them to run, then go stop them. That's kind of how I feel too. Aaron Rodgers in a big win for the Packers over the Steelers, ties Dan Marino with 420 passing touchdowns. Ben Roethlisberger also got his 400th touchdown pass in this game as the Packers defeat the Steelers. If you watch that game, though, I kind of felt bad for the Steelers in this sense. Going into halftime, the Packers were kicking a field goal to, I can't remember what the score, it was like 14-10 or something like that. And the Packers were kicking a field goal to go up 17-10. So last couple seconds of the half, Packers line up, snap the ball. The Steelers block the kick, return it for a touchdown. It was flagged for an offsides. I do not think they were offsides. I think it was a clean block. That would have put the Steelers up 17-14 instead of 17-10 being down. So that was a 10-point swing. Huge momentum. You're already on the road against a good team. But the Packers pulled that one out. I felt that was something that we had to deal with a lot as Browns fans for many, many years. So Steelers fans, I felt your pain on that one because you didn't deserve that. You deserve better. I still think the Packers probably would have won that game because they are the better team. And the offense for the Steelers just really, really looks bad. Najee Harris is so good. He is so good, but he is not going to be used properly because Roethlisberger is just I think it's his time. I
called that game the disappointment bowl because both Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger, when they don't do something well or somebody drops a pass, the look of disappointment on their faces is the worst.
Yes,
like it's not like a go team, let's try that again. Yeah. That's like a bunch of idiots, you know.
Yep. And well, and the Steelers get that big win at Buffalo week one, and you think, you know, this, hey, you know, they're going to surprise them. And they opened up my eyes. I thought, you know, and preseason, I picked the Steelers to go 10-7. I thought the Steelers were a playoff team. I'm not saying they're not. I'm not saying they're out of it. But the Steelers, just their defense doesn't quite look as good. And their offense is just, I don't know. Because they have some skill weapons. But Roethlisberger ain't the guy anymore, and they need to turn the page from him, as I'm sure most Steeler fans are probably hoping for a high draft pick or, I don't know, Dwayne Haskins to be the next coming. I don't know what it is, but the Steelers could be in for a long season. Could be in. I'm not saying they're done by any means, because believe me, as a Browns fan, I know to not do that.
Right.
and never fully count them out. This next graphic might be hard for you guys to see, but I just want to give you an overall quick image of the standings after 4 weeks. So the only 4-0 team left, the Arizona Cardinals, and the only 0-4 team, the Detroit Lions. And if you look at the AFC North, the Bengals, Ravens, and Browns all sitting at 3-1. And if you look at the AFC West, who the 3-1 teams, the Browns all have left on their schedule. The Chargers this week, Raiders towards the end of the year, and Broncos kind of in the middle of the season. So, you know, the Browns have a tough road to go still, but we're sitting 3-1, and, you know, I'll take 3-1 to start. You used to say this was the quarter way of the season. Now with that 17th game, it kind of messes up the math a little bit, but you know,
and you need decimals. This is like the 0.39753.
Exactly. So the Browns, you know, they're, you know, I still say break it up, chunk it, and whether that you do that after four games or five games, I think the Browns are in a pretty good spot. So very happy with where they are sitting now. And, you know, we'll look forward to the games this coming weekend. We'll talk about the AFC North opponents, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati, and their games coming up this weekend, as well as our pick'em segment that will be on Thursday. All right, let's switch gears to college football and start with the Ohio State Buckeyes. So Ohio State, I predicted the game 38-23. I thought it was going to be closer. The spread was actually 14.5. So I did have them covering, but I said last Thursday I would just stay away from that because I'm not sure. And boy, did they prove me wrong. They in the best way. They, you know, I put for number one on my Buckeye headlines, the Buckeyes having a down year is much exaggerated. So they just came out and blew the doors off of Rutgers. They were up 24-0 with 3 minutes left to go in the first quarter. They were up 45-6 at the half, and they just took their, you know, they took their foot off the pedal. They Travion Henderson only played a little bit. CJ Stroud didn't even have to throw a ball till they were up 14-0. But the Big Ten is looking very, very strong right now. It has five teams in the top 11. Iowa at number 3, Penn State at number 4, who Ohio State will have on October 30th. Ohio State sitting at number 7, Michigan at number 9 now, and Michigan State, I think Michigan State's number 11. I think Michigan State is way overrated. Again, if they prove me wrong, that's awesome, but they had that win at Miami, which was a nice win, but Miami stinks. They really are not a very good team this year. But five teams in the top 11 as it currently sits right now, with Ohio State being 7. We'll talk about a lot of upsets that happened this week in just a minute, which caused Ohio State to move up 4 spots. But Ohio State now has the 3rd best odds to win a national title, behind only Alabama and Georgia, who have both looked incredibly dominant this year. My number 2 point was the silver bullets continue to improve. So there was much talk about Ohio State and its defense being much maligned this year. It has really, really, really bounced back, especially these last 2 weeks. And I know people are going to say, oh, it's only Akron. Oh, it's only Rutgers. Rutgers is a legitimate team now. They don't have a great offense, but they do have some nice skill players. Ohio State did give up one big play to the wide receiver Crookshank, which, by the way, Crookshank, what a cool name. But yeah, they overall just played a great, great game. And the defense is really starting to show its improvements. And a lot of these young guys are really, really doing some damage. My 3rd point, CJ Stroud is the best quarterback for Ohio State this season. Now, what I mean by that, there's been a lot of hate on CJ Stroud because, well, they lost the Oregon game. He struggled a little bit against Tulsa. But this kid, you got to remember, he has played 4 games in his career. 4. Okay. He has, done a very, very nice job in those 4 games. He's averaging something like 330 yards passing, which was his exact number in this game. Maybe that was a little ode to our show. He threw 330 yards this weekend, but he is having a fantastic season. Are there some things he needs to improve on? Absolutely. He needs to show he can run the ball a little bit more. He did that a little bit on Saturday. He needs to make sure he's hitting guys in stride. And we'll get to my point number 5 in a minute, but he has the playmakers to do that. Just get the ball to them and things will take care of themselves. Number 4, Chris Olave could be Ohio State's all-time best receiver by year's end. And what I mean by that, now there's going to be a lot of argument because it's a lot of, who is your favorite guy? When did you start watching the Buckeyes? This or that. But Chris Olave, by the numbers, he right now, as it stands, he is 9th place all time and moving up that list quickly in receptions and in total yardage. And he is now tied for 3rd in touchdowns in his career. I think he's at 27. The all-time leader in touchdowns. Out receiver is David Boston. He is 34. So he's got a little bit of ground to gain, but he's got a lot of games to do it. And I think as long as he keeps this pace, he will be just fine. So again, number five was just get the ball to your playmakers. You know, you get the ball to your playmakers, good things will happen. Ohio State has the number one rated offense in college football based on yards per play. And I think they're 1 yard behind, on average, behind total yards in a game on offense in all of college football. So you have Chris Olave, as we mentioned, Garrett Wilson, probably the number one wide receiver that's going to go in the draft, Travion Henderson, Jackson Smith-Njigba, Jeremy Ruckert. I actually listed Henderson on my list twice. I just noticed that. But I'm giving my Buckeye leaves this week to CJ Stroud for coming back, bounce back game, great game, hopefully answering the critics, hopefully getting back into that Big Ten play and being you know, the great player that he is and was hyped up to be, to Chris Olave and also to Denzel Burke. Denzel Burke, a true freshman. He is playing corner for the first time in his career. Last couple years in high school. Remember, this kid was in high school last year, but he was asked to do basically everything, be the quarterback, be everything on defense for his high school team. He is now getting able to focus on one position and he is nailing it. So we will talk about the Maryland game, which is coming up on Saturday. We'll talk about that on Thursday's show. So home against Maryland this coming weekend. So let's take a look at the top 25, the week five Associated Press. So there was basically our big highlights from the weekend. Alabama absolutely just rolled Ole Miss 42 to 21. Nick Saban now 24-0 against former coaches from his staff that went on to be head coaches. Number two, Georgia destroys number eight, Arkansas, 37-0. In my opinion, I think Georgia should be the number one team. Alabama should be two, but at this point, it really doesn't matter. Number seven, Cincinnati goes into South Bend, and to quote Rudy, they went into South Bend and pushed Notre Dame around. So they come up with a 24-13 victory over the number nine Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We know Oregon very well. Number three, Oregon was upset in double overtime by Stanford. So that is a little bit of a hit to Ohio State's strength of schedule, but might actually, in the long run, help their playoff chances. Number four, Penn State blows out Indiana. Both of those teams are on Ohio State schedule coming up. Number five, Iowa dominated Maryland, who, again, Ohio State will play Maryland this weekend. Number six, Oklahoma wins again, but struggles again against Kansas State. They only win that game 37-31. Number 10, Florida loses to Kentucky this weekend. Kentucky, their head coach is Mark Stoops, a Youngstown native, one of the Stoops brothers. So big win for Kentucky to upset number 10, Florida. I talked about Ohio State beating Rutgers. Number 14, Michigan beats up Wisconsin, who Wisconsin coming into the season was highly thought of. They're kind of showing their true colors. They've fallen out of the top 25. They have three losses now against three very good teams, but three losses nonetheless. Number 19, Oklahoma State beat Baylor this weekend, 24-14. Texas A&M drops another one. They were number 15. They lose to Mississippi State. Clemson, who did win 19-13, but they won luckily, let me just say it that way, to Boston College. They dropped out of the top 25 this coming week. So first time since like 2015, they've been out of the top 25. UCLA is upset by Arizona State, and Fresno State is upset by Hawaii. So looking back, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams in the top 25 all lost this weekend. So Ole Miss, Arkansas, Notre Dame, Oregon, Florida, Baylor, Texas A&M, UCLA, Fresno State all lose this weekend. So lots of craziness happening in college football week to week. This might be one of the craziest years I can remember, but we're in for an interesting finish to go. We're almost to the halfway point. I think we're about week five here. So heading into week six on a 12 game slate where it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good October and November to watch football. Now, the Major League Baseball playoffs, we're going to switch to that now, starts tonight. Now, these were our picks way back in late March, early April that we did on the show. So I just wanted to review these real quick. So, if you're watching, you can see it. But in the East, we had, Greg and Brett had the Yankees. I had the Rays. The Rays actually won the American League East. We all picked the White Sox in the Central Division. They ended up winning the Central Division. Greg and Brett hit on the Astros, who won the American League West. And the wild cards were, were the Yankees. And and the Red Sox. None of us picked the Red Sox. That was kind of a surprise. So the Yankees and Red Sox will play tonight. One game, winner take all, to get to the American League Division Series. So we'll talk about the National League a little bit too, but I'm just going to give you my picks. So we're just going to go to the bracket here, and I'm just going to show you my overall thoughts with what I think. So here are my Major League Baseball playoff predictions, and I just want to keep this short because I really haven't given baseball its due this year, but the Indians also, by the way, I also picked the Indians to go 80-82. You know what they finished? 80-82. So should have bet that in Vegas.
Can you bet that?
You might be able to bet the team over under. I don't know if you can actually bet the exact amount of wins or not. So, I just give myself a pat on the back there, I guess. So, here are my picks for the American League. So I am taking Boston tonight. I'm taking the Red Sox. Here's why. It's in Boston, and I think the Red Sox pull it out. I think it's going to be a close game. At this point last year, the Indians and the Yankees were playing each other. And, unfortunately, the Indians won't be playing. But I think the Red Sox get it done and they move on. But I think whoever wins tonight ends up losing to Tampa Bay in the ALCS. So I like Tampa to move on to the ALCS. I like the White Sox to take out Houston. So I think it's going to be a Tampa Bay and Chicago ALCS, and I like Tampa to get to the World Series out of the American League. In the National League, the San Francisco Giants, who have the best record in all of baseball, I think they had something like 105 or 106 wins this year, will play the winner of the Los Angeles Dodgers St. Louis Cardinals wild card play-in game. And that is a really tough break for the Los Angeles Dodgers because they won like 103 games. They had the second best record in all of baseball, but they have to play a one game winner take all scenario. So I have Los Angeles beating St. Louis in the wild card game to take on San Francisco. I do have LA beating San Francisco in the NLDS. However, I think whoever wins that NLDS series wins the whole thing. I think I am actually picking the Dodgers to end up beating Tampa Bay, but I think LA and San Francisco, it's going to be a very, very heated rivalry. And I think Milwaukee takes out Atlanta as well. Those are just my quick thoughts on the playoffs. We'll check in with that periodically on the show and see where we're going with that. But I like the Dodgers to win it all. Talking about the Indians, now the Guardians, we'll say a quick goodbye to, we said goodbye to Chief Wahoo a couple of years ago. He's kind of made his way out of, the limelight. And the script Indians on the scoreboard, that's no longer going to be there. It's going to be weird. I did not go to a game this year at Progressive Field. I still call it the Jake, but I did not go to a game this year. So I unfortunately didn't get to see that Indians sign one more time. It's going to be interesting to see what they do because that thing is freaking huge, that sign. I don't know what they're going to do with it.
Well, if you still call it the Jake and I still call it Gund, it's going to be about 15 years before we delete Chief Wahoo or Indians from our vernacular.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think the people that have, you know, I think people under 30, but maybe even under 40 will be fine with this going forward. For some people, it's always going to be the Indians. It's always going to be the tribe because that's what you grew up with. And I think it's fine to call them the tribe. I don't want to get into a political debate or discussion, but you know, I understand the reasoning for getting rid of it and changing the name, especially the Wahoo logo. I get it. It's a cartoon caricature of a depiction of Native Americans. And, you know, there's been a whole big ordeal about blackface and with politicians. And if you're painting Indians in red face, that's just not a good look. So I understand it. Do I like it? Not necessarily. It's the cancel culture, you know, and all that stuff. But I don't think there's anything wrong with just the Indians name by itself. You know, I think it was more of a celebration of, you know, Ohio is literally, I think, called Big River. Like, it's an Indian word meaning Big River. So I don't know. You know, we have a lot of Native American tribes that have been, indigenous to Ohio. There's, you know, you just go up and down anywhere in Ohio and you can see things named after tribes and Indians and whatever. So I thought it was a great nickname. I'll always remember the Indians. I'll probably still refer to them as Indians in some time. However, with that said, the Guardians, I'll be fine with it. Is it my favorite name they could have picked? Probably not, but I'm okay with it. It'll grow on me.
It's just sports.
It's not.
I mean, yeah, sports is, we like it, mm-hmm. but it's not going to make or break you.
Yeah, exactly. Could you put that logo up one more time? I'm fine with the new C, the new Cleveland font, even the Guardians in script. The one thing I don't love is the cartoon looking baseball thing. And if that just goes on like the patch on their shoulder or whatever, that's fine. But if that's a hat, I'm not going to be a big fan of that. So,
it's going to be a hat. You're going to have the winged people in the stands and they're going to think to be riding it on chariots and it's going to be so great.
But for anyone that hasn't seen the bridges in Cleveland, they are very cool. The Guardians of, I don't know exactly if it's called like the Guardians of the Highway or what it, you know, it's not the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not the Disney stuff, but it is pretty cool. And then throw that up there one more time, because I want your opinion on this.
Yes.
So the Indians is not okay. Mm-hmm. Chief Wahoo is not okay.
Right.
But I will say the Florida State Seminoles are okay because that tribe has given permission to the university to use it. They've been fine with it. But the Browns play at Kansas City week one this year. As soon as that game started, I'm hearing the tomahawk chop and the war chant, you know, kind of like the tribal war chant. So that's okay. And the Chiefs are okay, but the Indians are not. The Blackhawks of Chicago, you know, that depicts an Indian, obviously a Blackhawk Indian. The Atlanta Braves, they do the tomahawk chop too. So Joe, you don't have to get too political. You can. It's your studio, whatever you want. But what are your thoughts on the Indians not being okay or changing their name, but then these teams being fine?
Well, this is sort of like we're not following a principle. We're mm-hmm. just chasing down sensitivity. So it's one of those things where what's next is whatever we get sensitive to next. And I don't think it ever ends. I think, you know, if we're like, hey, if we are paying homage, then mm-hmm. it's okay. I can see that.
Sure.
But if it's degrading and somebody is offended to it, I mean, think about all of the other, you know, non-Native American, you know, things that they depicted as a caricature and could be insulting to, you know, Irish people.
The Notre Dame Fighting
that's
Irish.
It. This is never ending. That's the one if we all said, okay, the part of it that we don't like is that we have something that we know completely makes fun of or is degrading, let's get rid of those. Mm-hmm. And all the ones that are okay, you know, we'll follow that principle.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. That's good. I couldn't agree more on that. So, okay. This last topic I want to talk about, we got to address it. I don't know. Did you see the video over the weekend? Urban Meyer?
No, okay. I did not.
All right. Well, you're in for it.
Okay.
You're in for a treat here. So I'm going to show you a video. This is, first of all, the story is out of Jacksonville, the Jacksonville News. But Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars played the Cincinnati Bengals this weekend in Cincinnati, or I should say last Thursday. So Urban Meyer did not take the flight back with his team, you know, stayed and saw his grandkids, saw his wife, saw his family, and goes to, he has a bar in Dublin. I've actually been there before. It's called Urban Meyer's Pint House. He was there, had a few beverages, had some interesting conversations from just different things I've read on Twitter. And I don't want to speculate because who knows what's true, who knows what's not. But there was a, we'll just call her a young lady that was trying to get him out on the dance floor and starts dancing on him. And we're going to watch this. This blew up the internet. This blew up Twitter on Saturday. He was there to watch the Ohio State game. He was there eating dinner with his family and then apparently ended up at the bar. And then I'll let the Jacksonville kind of give them credit. But Jacksonville 4 news station, we're just going to play this.
Urban Meyer now addressing this video showing him in a compromising position with a woman at his restaurant and bar in Columbus, Ohio, a woman who is not his wife.
I just apologize to the team and staff and for being a distraction. Just stupid.
Just this afternoon, another video from a different angle was made public on social media. Like the original, it too is going viral. This one is 7 seconds long. You can see Meyer's hand on the inner part of the woman's leg. Now the coach says he is apologizing to the team for being a distraction. Scott Johnson is joining us now. He's been talking with fans. Scott?
Well, Tom, some fans are telling me this brings a negative light on the team who's already struggling at 0-4, while others say they're fans of Meyer as a football coach, and this doesn't affect them. Two videos surfaced showing Jaguars coach Urban Meyer at an Ohio bar. They're going viral on social media. This is the first one we showed you Sunday, showing a woman dancing against him. Monday, this one surfaced showing another angle, which we are blurring for broadcast.
Do you think it affects like the team, the Jaguars?
Yeah, I think it kind of affects their image, just, you know, him being a really big part of their image and what they represent.
I actually didn't see the video, but I'm kind of an Urban Meyer fan, so I'm good with it.
Meyer apologized to everyone from team owner Shad Khan to his players, saying the woman was trying to get him on the dance floor. Meyer says he never wants to be a distraction to the team he leads and is supposed to be an example for.
I am concerned about that. I have a very good relationship with our players. I've dealt with this, not on the other side, but with staff members and with other things, and I've dealt with that. You know. So to say I'm concerned, yeah, I am concerned, but I just got to, you know, do right.
Meyer said his players have accepted his apology and are focused on their game this coming week against Tennessee.
So, did he... Ouch. Did that make you uncomfortable?
A little bit.
Not the dancing doesn't even make me uncomfortable. That press conference made me extremely uncomfortable. I hate to say I feel bad for him because he looks like he's going to throw up. He, like, you can tell he is mortified and he is embarrassed. And apparently he had a meeting with the players and, you know, apologized to them, like he said in there. But you could tell this is not good for him. So what do you think?
I want to see the meeting with his wife. See what that meeting is the one I'm interested
in. Yes. And his wife, Shelley Meyer, is very prominent out there. She's out in the community. She's very prominent on social media. And yeah, I'm sure that was not a good look for Urban. You know, they say the NFL is a real grind. All I'll say is this. I thought Urban Meyer should have not gone to the NFL. It would have been his best interest. Now, is this the NFL? No, but it's going to get blown up and magnified and whatever, you know, whether you're the Ohio State coach or whether you're involved in a major program, university, franchise, whatever it is, that's going to make major news. And unfortunately, everybody's got a camera now. That shouldn't have happened. He shouldn't have done that. I'm not excusing it, but you like he said, you can't put yourself in that situation, because that girl or whoever it was knew exactly what she was doing. You know, she'd probably drunk herself or having some fun, but it's not a good look, not a good look for Urban. And I was watching that Cincinnati Jacksonville game, and he does not look long for the NFL, and he is a great football coach, but some people are just not made for the NFL. Nick Saban tried it, didn't work. Pete Carroll tried it, kind of some success, kind of not. There's been plenty of others. Steve Spurrier, Urban Meyer is, I don't know if he's going to make it through this season. So,
but to go so many years without scandal, and then you join a losing team, and then boom.
So that's just where I'll leave it. I think it's unfortunately a bad look for him, his family. The Jacksonville Jaguars, I'm sure, are not happy, especially the fact that, you know, he wasn't with his team either. And they had played Thursday. So that means he probably wasn't with them Friday, Saturday, and probably returned Sunday, I would imagine. But yeah, not a good look for Urban. And unfortunately, I don't know where this will go or where he'll end up, but I could see him at USC, or I could just see him straight up retiring. And for his health, straight up retiring might be best, but he might not want to retire and just be stuck at home for a while.
No, play some football, dude.
He might want to, he might
want to. 7 days a week, Abby, actually.
I'm very, very busy. Can't come home right now. So, okay. So we'll end it there. We will put out on social media when our Halloween show comes out. We're also going to do our normal Thursday thoughts, previewing the high school, college, NFL, and it's just some fun other stuff we'll talk about on Thursday. So everybody have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.